You've got an extra busy week because, as we've noted, and you've been reported to be a finalist at Missouri State University mm-hmm. for that presidential position. And first of all, just wanted to talk about what prompted the look.
Well, as much as anything, the two institutions, Murray State and Missouri State, and I'll probably get confused on my MSUs here, are very similar types of schools. Both obviously are public institutions. The level of programming and services is very similar. The academics line up quite nicely between the two. And really the only difference is the fact that Missouri State is more than double our size, about 23,000. They have actual campuses in a couple of other locations, akin to our regional campuses yet, but full-standing campuses beyond Springfield, Missouri. And then, of course, Springfield as a town is significantly larger, and that, you know, certainly isn't the deciding factor. But the other factor, too, is the feeling generally that Rhonda and I have had that we want to try to stay in the broadly defined Mississippi Valley. If you've looked where I've worked, Illinois, Kentucky, Tennessee, if this should come to pass, Missouri, it's within that Mississippi River corridor, and given all of our family connections and our own roots, makes sense for us. So those would probably be the drivers as far as taking a look at that university.
But when does your contract here at Murray State expire?
My contract here expires on June 30 of 2014. And within my contract at the university, there is a date certain by which the board has to decide whether they desire to extend that or not. And depending on what happens at Missouri State, I certainly am open to that conversation. Sometimes when you look at another institution as a president, this doesn't hold true, it seems, for basketball coaches, football coaches, yeah. and that type of thing. But when, as a president, you think about another institution, I think sometimes the public can view that as the incumbent, you're dissatisfied or there's something that's making you unhappy. And that's not the case at all at Murray State. Rather, with, again, to say, if you think about the wheelhouse in which I'm going to work in my career, this is simply a bigger institution to carry that out. But if it would be the case that I'm not successful and remain at Murray State, the board would have an obligation to determine my contract a little less than a year from now. So in that sense, it's probably not bad timing. And two, if you look at my coming on 6 years at Murray State, we've been able to kind of bookend a number of projects. Obviously, we've gotten enrollment turned around where we were close to skidding under 10,000 about 3 years ago. You know, we're going to be very close to 11 this year. Capital campaign blew past a $60 million target to reach a $70 million goal that we'll be announcing at homecoming. Our institutional reaccreditation, this is the accreditation we must have approved by the United States Department of Education to keep offering federal student aid. So you can see it's critical to us. Our institutional accreditation's coming up, and we're in very good shape for that. We haven't gone through it yet, but a lot of that work is done on the front end, and I feel confident that we're in fine shape for that with the leadership of many on campus. So if you look at, you know, how a lot of the big pieces of work that we've taken on have kind of gotten to a point where I feel that there's a little bit of breathing room now, maybe it's not a bad time to look given the circumstances.
Well, with you potentially leaving for Missouri State, we have a definite loss of another upper administration position, which
yes.
I guess you would call it the second in command at Missouri State.
And it really is. And you're talking, of course, Chad, about the provost position.
Yeah, Bonnie Higgison, the provost, had a three-year contract, and she has decided to not seek another contract mm-hmm. at the end of this academic mm-hmm. year. So there could be a potential search happening, or there could be two interims as a president and a provost at Murray State University. Well, first of all, does she have an option to stay on for a fourth year?
Yes. You may recall that when Bonnie took the position, she was given a term contract, and the term of that was 3 years, but there was an option to extend into the fourth year. So given that Bonnie is starting now that last third year, we had started some conversations this summer about her desire, willingness to stay on for a fourth year. The idea being that if she didn't want to, we needed to be thinking about a provost search sometime here in 12-13. And I had been supportive, would like to have seen her stay. But I know there are a number of factors as she's looking at what time she wants to remain working and really had a desire to go back, do some classroom work. She's a distinguished member of the College of Education faculty, a national expert in reading education. She coordinates a lot of our programming with the country of Belize, a partnership that's very strong. So I think as she looks in the last few years that she wants to work at all here at Murray State, she'd like to finish it as a College of Education faculty member. I respect that. I would have loved to have seen her stay the full potential 4 years of her term contract, but I also understand and support her desire to go back to the classroom.
What can that say for a university to state lawmakers and the Council on Post-Secondary Education that the flagship institution of far western Kentucky could potentially be looking for two head officials at that?
Well, at times these transitions fall this way. And I happened to meet with the Faculty Senate this past week, and of course this same conversation came up. And, you know, I told them that they just need to remember the work, the power, the vitality of a university doesn't come from a president, doesn't come from a provost. They can help it. They can add value to that. But the work and success of a university comes from the faculty and staff, the students who are here carrying on the vision and mission on a day-to-day basis, slogging through what we all do every day. Over time, that's how the power of a university is built, and we've got it here. The challenge of having interims covering key positions is sometimes it does put some hold on the decision-making or on big moves that have to take place. But if you look at the work that I kind of ticked off, whether it's Paducah, accreditation, fundraising, all of these things, we're really in pretty good stead, I think, for a couple of years before kind of the next new bookend of work would be put in place.
And now, while this is happening, we have this big look at the Murray State University budget with budget planning review teams
Yes.
all across the university.
Yes.
And again, though, your charge is to shepherd this process along.
Right.
So how does a long-term project like this continue?
It will continue unabated. If I would end up leaving for Missouri State, or if there's something else that would cause me to think about another position, that work continues apace. The board this past spring, in approving this year's university budget, made very clear that we had 1 year to kind of get this figured out because we had to go into about $2 million of operating reserves to get this year's budget made. So then the challenge became in working with the board to figure out how to do a full-scale budget review, look at all of the operations in a comprehensive way. Some places might do this with a consultant or working through a state agency. I really felt strongly that we had the talent on our own campuses with faculty, staff, and students to put together a number of these budget review teams, as you've mentioned, broad representation, very inclusive across the university community. And these teams are literally spending this year looking at potential for new revenue, reallocations, possibly discontinuing some programs or services, but not in a wholesale fashion, to come up with a set of recommendations for our board to consider during budget season next spring. And given the work that's gone on now after about 2 months of this, I'm really encouraged. The teams are taking this seriously. They're diving in. They're looking at very discrete, granular levels of information. They're getting to that point at this juncture. And I think we're going to see really a very thoughtful, reasoned set of recommendations from these budget teams on how we go forward. Remember, Chad, the driver on this is not some crisis. As you well know, and we've talked about in this studio, the university took over a 6% hit to its appropriation for this year's budget from the state, cost us well over $3 million. But we didn't do a knee-jerk reaction like some other campuses did, where we just started cutting and laying people off. Because we had the reserves that we'd banked for a number of years, we were able to, in essence, buy a year to go through this process, and we'll figure it out. And what that's going to allow us to do, since we know state appropriations aren't going to come back in a big way, and we know that tuition is going to have to be very moderately increased going forward, we're not going to be able to take big jumps, the savings that we get from the BPR teams will provide us a premium, if you will, so that we can think about how to pay for some new academic programs that we need. So we can figure out how to continue to add to our scholarship base so that we can look to do some faculty and staff raises and pay for fixed costs as they go up, which we haven't done well over the years. It gives us a footing to head off into the next 3 to 5 years with a more stable situation than what we would have if we just did nothing.
Dr. Dunn, we are coming up on what you have now done. This will be the second time that you are doing a standalone State of the University address.
And that's right. We started, as you mentioned, last year doing a separate event on campus. Normally, this had been done as a luncheon event when faculty and professional staff were coming back to work in August. And there's just so much going on that time of year. I decided last year we probably just need to move it to a little later in the fall. This is very common as you look at campuses across the country, and we'll be taking place October 10th.
How will you organize this speech?
Again, I can't give away all my secrets because then nobody may be interested in the speech, I suppose. But really what I'm going to try to do is lay out three broad directions that I think we're going to see the university going in the coming years. And, you know, it's kind of awkward given the fact that I'm a candidate for another position, and in the midst of that, giving the State of the University speech here, and the fact that we've got all of this budget review work that's going on right now on the campus throughout the course of this academic year to really kind of set these targets or goals for university direction moving forward. So I have kind of pivoted a bit in terms of thinking about what I talk about, and instead of listing out some things that we may be taking on or directions that we'll advance on, I'm really going to try to chart out three prongs for the future that I think the university is going to have to be considering itself with, no matter who's president, no matter what happens with state budgets, and all of the things that impact kind of the day-to-day operations of the university get set aside to think about these three broad areas where you're going to see more focus. One of which is having to do with a move that our board has taken. They set out some strategic directions in a process they underwent this past year, and they've kind of, in my view, brought us back to the basics, and they've set out some things that they want to see the university do. They have stated explicitly that we should be the university of choice for the region. They have indicated clearly that they want tuition to be as low as we can while still supporting services. They want a strong vision of regional outreach. So with their strategic directions that they've established over the past year, and again, you've got to remember, Chad, we've had a kind of a new board that's really come together over the past 2 years with new appointments and things of that nature. So they've kind of established these what I would call foundational targets. We've got to decide what it means to be a university of choice. How do we measure that? How do we work toward that indicator, and what are the steps for that? They've made clear in this strategic direction statement that they want the university to display excellence. Well, we're going to have to operationalize that to some degree. Now, excellence was always one of my strategic imperatives, and we would tie it to a project or an undertaking. But they're taking, in my view, a broader view with their strategic directions document to say we need to define what institutional excellence stands for over time, independent of presidents, projects that we may do, whatever. So that's going to be one large chunk of work that we're going to have to think through and set some metrics for. What is now the strategic imperatives that I've really tried to move the university forward on? Excellence and quality, outreach with partnerships, innovation, those types of things. I think you're going to see shift to some degree to capacity building exercises and projects, initiatives, if you will, that support these foundational goals that the board wants to get into more. So instead of it being as project driven, where we might under the strategic imperative excellence and quality, talk about doing the comprehensive fundraising campaign, which I know you want to visit about in a minute. Instead of setting up a discrete project on how we move innovation forward, which we're doing with West Kentucky Ag Bioworks as one example. You're going to see the strategic imperatives out of my office probably morph a little bit more into capacity building exercises that support and inform those broader strategies or goals that the board has to operationalize and set out. And then the third area, or the third prong for the future of Murray State, I really do think is going to be a continued review and analysis of our financial model, of our budget. And even though we're going through that process this year in a big way, it's not going to be a one-time shot that we never have to worry about again. I think we're going to have to begin incorporating an ongoing and continuous fiscal budgetary review, because the degrees of freedom or the factors that are impinging upon us financially aren't probably going to get drastically better anytime soon. So we've got to figure out a way to deal with that, to look at new revenue streams, to figure out how we continue to be a lean operation, all of that type of things, that thing. Those three kind of areas, I believe, you're going to see as ways we move forward from here really into the next decade. And in many ways are quite exciting, but it will be a bit of a change to some degree driven by finances, getting more back to the roots of what the university stands for and ensuring that on those foundational goals that we have the steps in place to continue to do that work well and carry on the longstanding tradition of success here at Murray State.
And that's the State of the University. That's Wednesday at 3 o'clock.
Yes.
Is that in the Industrial and Technology Building?
Actually, we're going to do that, I believe, in Rather Auditorium.
Okay.
And I kind of think through this every year. And I'm actually going to do the speech extemporaneously. I'm just going to work from very carefully prepared notes. I'm not a fan of scripted speeches. There are times for them. Graduation is one. Budget testimony in Frankfurt's another. But I'm really going to come in and to some degree try to talk a little more freely and not just read from a script, a speech that's been prepared.
And you will be celebrating the achievement of the stretched goal of the capital campaign.
Yes, hold thy banner high.
That's right. So you're at $70 million. Are we at
$70 million? I hope I'm not breaking some rule of secrecy here, but yes, we will get past our $70 million stretch goal. And Chad, many of the listeners will recall the fact that when we'd gone public in 2009 with the campaign, we had set a goal of $60 million. And recall, this was coming out of the Great Recession. We were really going to go public with Hold Thy Banner High in 2008. The crash happened. We pulled back, talked to our major donors, made sure everyone was able to kind of settle out and get comfortable with the economy again to some degree, so that when we had enough security that our major donors were going to be okay and stay with us, then we were able to move forward and open that campaign publicly in 2009. So with that, we set the $60 million goal. We've had success in that. Actually, up to a year ago, we reached the $60 million, set a stretch goal of $70 million, and we will actually get past that. The exciting thing, of course, Chad, you know this, but for me, what is just so rewarding is the fact that almost half of the money raised is going into endowed scholarships, and it's allowed us to double the number and the amount of scholarships for our students here at the university. And that gives us a very good footing for affordability and accessibility for our students going into the future.
And the obvious next question is, when does the next campaign start?
We're not going to do anything in terms of an announcement right away. There is some campaign fatigue. When you work this hard and this intensely on something of this magnitude, you get some donor weariness. Our staff is worn out. The foundation has had to process these gifts, and everyone needs time just to take a breather, get to kind of a new set point. But I would guess that within a year or two, we'll start conversations about what the next campaign would be, how it would be framed, what it might be for, with the idea that in not too many more years, we'll go back out again. That has become the nature of now public higher education as well, not just the independent colleges and universities, but for places like us, again, hearkening back to this notion of loss of state support and the fact that we just can't keep, you know, jamming tuition increases down our students' throats, this philanthropy, private giving, creation of endowments, estate gifts, pledges, all of this is becoming, for publics, a very clear and strong third leg of the funding stool. And we're just going to have to be in that business perpetually for the future. However, we've got to give everybody a chance to rest and recover, let our donors have some time without us bugging them. We'll continue the annual fund and targeted drives. But we'll start talking probably within a year or so about what the next big thing may be.
Well, Dr. Dunn, thanks very much.
Thanks, Chad.